Yeah, they said it was pretty okay. And no, I didn't see it. I was nursing my thumb. Anyway, they said that there might be some housekeeping issues, and then nobody ever told me what they were. So I guess I don't know that there are any. If they come up, we'll report them as they come along. We will have lunch brought in here. There's coffee and water back here. You can feel free to get up at any time and take care of yourself. I won't take it personally if you wander to the liquids. I'll just be jealous you have them and I don't. And the point of the class today is really to take the class I did for 8 or 9 months and ended up almost exactly a year ago. I did the last one in June last year. Update it. That was a very general introduction to the known universe of the internet class. It didn't have very much iPad specific things in it, and it didn't take you through any sort of advanced. It was really, we're going to assume you don't know anything, and when you leave, you're going to know quite a bit. In this class, you'll get a lot out of it if you start not knowing anything, but I'm also going to continue on into some pretty good detail, because the point of this class is that you feel comfortable using the iPad to solve problems. That's what I'm after. Now, to do that, I still believe you have to know the fundamentals of the internet, so I'm going to give them to you. You have to know the fundamentals of leased lines, so you're going to learn a lot about that. And then, specifically, how do those things apply to the iPad? 80% of what we're going to go through in this class applies to things that aren't the iPad every bit as much as to the iPad, because the theory is no different. Routing is routing, DNS is DNS, and then it's down to pulling the manual out on the piece of software you got and say, how do I do this function in this box? But if you don't know what function you need to do, it doesn't matter what the manual tells you, because they're only going to tell you how to do it after you know. They're not going to tell you why you would want to. And that's what this class is all about. So I'm going to start out with an introduction that starts pretty much at the beginning with this slide that's up here. You folks do have in your kit these slides to follow along with. I don't know. I think these are going to be pretty readable up here. We looked at them. If it gets too bad, we can turn the lights out and open up a little of the outside light. We tried that the other day and it works. So if anyone's having any problems reading or following along because of the light, just let me know and we'll adjust it. Basically, the first thing that I want to start this class out with is to remind you that all of this is at its core very simple. This will be very easy to forget, because it will seem like you can't possibly imagine that you could ever know it all. And the answer is, it's actually not very hard to know most of what makes the internet work. It is very hard to know if you know it, because it's very complex. That means there's tons and tons of pieces. But it's just three or four things done over and over and over again. And so when you chase them down, one of the hardest things in getting educated about something is to know when you really have seen everything there is. Because as long as you think there might be a piece you don't know, you're sure you're still confused because you're looking for something that's not there. That keeps you very disoriented and very sure you don't know what's going on. So one of the things I want to do in this class is make sure that you understand that this is all there is, that you really have seen at least some instance of every piece that there is anywhere in the internet. And that you understand that all it is these things, maybe bigger ones, smaller ones, faster ones, slower ones, but it's the same kind of thing just over and over and over again. When it reaches a certain size, however, it's the size and the numbers of parts starts to make it get almost organic in nature, and we're going to go over some of the reasons why that's so and how you can deal with that and put yourself back in control of the pieces you need to be in control of in order to use the internet well. Because the assumption of this class is that you're at the site of sort of in the middle of the pyramid. That is, there's a backbone or some part of the internet that's above you, and there's users or some group of people you're sending the internet out to below you. And in fact, the real assumption is you're about one layer back from the actual people who are using it, period. And you're going to really be in the position of having the most pressure put on you of anybody in the link to get problems solved, because the user is going to be banging on you with a problem they don't even know what it is. And you're going to be kind of the link back into the system to try to figure out what to do. Or the user's going to come to you and say, I need to do this. How do I do it? Can I do it? Can you do it for me? And you need to know enough to understand how to say yes or no. And if it's yes, it's going to take these things to do and how to go about it. That's really the underlying fundamental purpose of this class. The internet ultimately is nothing but a large collection of network computers similar to a LAN. It's just really big. But there's nothing different ultimately about it. However, when a LAN gets this big, there are some specific issues that come about. These issues come about in LANs, and if you're in a corporate LAN or something, you can run into many of these issues just in that setting. In fact, you really run into them as soon as you get a LAN bigger than it's all connected together by the same Ethernet. As soon as you start to have two segments to your LAN, you really get most of these issues. And by the time you have thousands of segments to your LAN, which is what the internet has, you can no longer get away from these issues. There's just no way to run and hide. You've got to face all of them. And that is that it is always going to be a multi-segmented network, meaning that you must use routers and bridges to connect pieces together. We're going to go through in this class details behind this, each one of these pieces, but I'm trying to lay out the bigger picture for you in this piece right now. The second thing you run into is multiple transmission types and mixed. Most LANs, you pick one kind of thing. If it's a token ring LAN, you use token ring to hook all the pieces together. If it's an Ethernet LAN, you use Ethernet to hook all the pieces together. When you get a wide area network like the internet, you're going to have Ethernet, you're going to have token ring, you're going to have leased lines. And your leased lines are going to come in a lot of different flavors. You're going to have DS0, DS1, T1, frame relay. Somewhere in there, you're going to have a wire that's made out of one technology and another wire out of a different technology. You're going to have all this mixture of technologies. And you're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have dial-up, modems, ISDN. Again, however, as we're going to see, when you look at each one of these in isolation, don't let the fact that they're different kinds confuse you. It's just a wire, and you're trying to get data from one end of the wire to the other. And you're trying to make the best cost performance decision on the wire. You're trying to make the best procurement decision on the wire. But the point is still just to hook a wire between two machines. And the last one, and this one is the one that makes you feel most powerless at times in the internet, distributed management and administration, meaning parts of it are not under your direct control. And, by the way, Murphy's Law is that that's where the problem's going to be. And you're going to have to find out how to influence the person whose control it's under, which mostly means you're going to have to discover the problem and present it to him all digested and say, I need you to do this to fix your problem. Why? Because even though it's his problem, you're the one suffering. And ultimately that means you have to do the work to understand enough to figure out what the problem is and say, I know it's your problem, but I'm really here to help you. You're not going to have to do any work to figure out what it is. Here's what it is. I've already solved it for you. You just have to go do these things. Now go check it out and find out if I'm right or wrong, but because if you don't do that, it takes forever to get somebody to decide to get up off his desk and go over and spend a day trying to figure out your problem, because he's not suffering from it. You are. That's the distributed management and administration issues that arise. Those are really the things that make it get complicated. To deal with all of this, there are four main areas of internet technology, of the political structure, the administrative structure, whatever you want to call it, that you really have to understand to put yourself in a position to be able to solve problems quickly, to be able to create solutions, to be able to know what you can and can't do and what it takes to do it and how you would deploy it. And if you know these four areas well, I will tell you that you will be more of an internet expert than 90% of the people who take money being internet experts every day. This is, if you know these things, you will be a star in being able to understand and maneuver in the world of the internet. IP addressing and routing. That comes from the multi-segmented LAN nature of it. On Ethernet LANs, you just have LAN cards. You sort of know they have addresses. They print on the screen when you boot the machine, those funny little numbers with colons on them. But you don't really have to pay much attention to them, because you don't. There's one set of wires, you're on one segment of a LAN, and the software can handle that for you. And there's occasionally times when you have to get related to them, but it's, you kind of go in and do a quick hit and get out, and you really mostly don't even have to know much about what it was. Once you start putting routers and bridges into a LAN, you now have to really understand what's going on. Because if you don't understand the purpose and the point of what it's all about, there's just no way that trial and error is going to get it done. It's just too many combinations, most wrong. And you're just not going to get there by trial and error. So we're going to spend a lot of time in this class on IP addressing and routing, and so that you understand what the theory of it, what it's about, and how to do it. And we're going to teach you details in lab on how to do it, both on an iPad and on a Cisco 2501 router, which is the most commonly encountered router that you'll find. If you're to pick one device that's out there in bulk, the Cisco 2501 router outnumbers everything else. And if you know that router, you can probably figure out other routers pretty easily. They all are sort of like that. Second thing, domain name system. This is the biggest, most distributed management part of the internet, and it's the one that relates the technology to the human being. When that breaks, or when it's not right, humans are extremely distressed, because the fact that the hardware's there, that the computers still can talk to each other, doesn't matter, because ESOFCOM doesn't get here, and I don't remember that 199 dot whatever it was that will work without DNS. And so, even though DNS has nothing to do with technically connecting the internet together, it's the source of most of the problems that human beings sense and recognize as the internet is broke. Third thing is leased line technologies and issues. There's two parts to this problem. One is, if you've got a leased line and anything goes wrong with it, you're going to learn what it being your leased line means, even though it's probably got five vendors in it between you and having it work. And none of them really want to talk to you. You're really going to have to solve these problems on your own and drive them up into the telephone company, Metropolitan Fiber, IDG, somebody who really wants you to go away except when it's time to send a check. And you have to understand this, because you have to know enough to know if they're blowing smoke, because 90% of the time on your first call, they will blow smoke to get you off the phone. Now, I wish I didn't have to say that, but we have been through this a lot here, and I think we have developed one of the best tech support departments at busting through leased line problems in states we're not even in. And I'll guarantee you there's not a one of them we've ever approached where the first call, the technical person who should know better, made up a story. Just made one up that had nothing to do with what was going on, because he didn't want to say, I don't know. And so we're going to spend a lot of time on that. You're going to learn about T-carrier technology. You're going to learn about DS0s. And you're going to learn about all this stuff, because you have to. I wish you didn't have to, but you do. And so you're going to get comfortable enough with it to understand what's going on. And the last piece that you need to understand is the concept of client-server program relationships, because everything in the internet is ultimately a client-server program. And we'll go through a lot of that and how the pieces relate. And that brings us to the whole point. We're going to spend a lot of time on details in the next 2 days, but do not forget, there is only one reason we're doing this. The whole point of the internet, IP addressing, routing, DNS, leased lines, CSU, DSUs, filters, firewalls, everything we talk about only exists to allow software on one computer to connect to software on another computer. And everything else is just some way to make that possible. So when we get into the details and we're down on the deck and looking around and poking at the pieces, don't forget there's not two points. There's only one. It's to hook two computers together way far apart. And be able to do it easily and quickly under software control. A connection on the internet always occurs from a client piece of software to a server program. There's no other possible way anything happens. Because that's the definition. That's why the words are defined to mean that. Any program that begins the connection to another program is the client. Any program that hangs out and waits for programs to connect to it and answers connections is a server. Anything that happens in the internet happens when a client program connects to a server program, and then together they create a single process that works with distance between the parts. I put this slide in here not because I want to insult anyone's intelligence, but because it's amazingly easy to forget that this is the whole point. This is all we're trying to do, is hook two pieces of software together, one on one computer to one on another computer, and create a setting where those computers can be anywhere in the world, from across the room to halfway around the globe. And it works the same. And where you're effectively able to connect to these software on all different kind of computers, so you can, your client can connect to this computer and then disconnect and immediately connect to another computer and do it seamlessly enough that a user can sort of feel this is all one process. And that's what gives rise to things like the World Wide Web, where you click a link and you get a page, you click a link and you get a page, and it feels like you're doing one smooth thing, and every piece can come from a different computer in a different location anywhere in the world. And that's how come that's possible. It's because the point is that a connection occurs from a client, in that case your web browser, to a server program, the web server for that particular link. And every link makes a connection, transfers the file, disconnects. Next time you click, it connects to another server or the same server, and the structure makes it be okay to be either one. And that's the whole point of what we're doing. Everything we're doing exists only to allow that to happen. And so when it all seems lost and dark and muddy here in the next couple days, remember, that's why we're doing this. Routing. We're going to go into routing in a lot of detail, and your head's going to hurt. I tried to make it not happen, but I didn't know a way. But you're going to learn how to route, and your head's going to hurt before you get there, though, and I'm sorry to tell you that's really the truth. We're going to make it as easy as we can, and we're going to make you learn as much as you can about routing. But right now, I want you to understand the whole point of routing without any technical details at all. And that is that routing creates virtual wires. Remember what the whole point was: to make a connection from one computer to another. To do that, you're creating a virtual wire between these two computers. Routing creates that virtual wire. That's what its purpose is. In the internet, the basic unit of data is the IP packet. TCP/IP, the /IP is internet protocol. And that is the fundamental protocol, just like Ethernet is the protocol on an Ethernet wire. IP is the protocol of the internet. And the IP packet is what does everything on the internet. And the IP packet has an IP address that basically tells that packet where it's from and where it's supposed to go, and that creates the wire. Routing uses this address to send an IP packet to the proper computer. When it leaves one computer, the address says, make a logical wire to this other computer. And that's what routing tries to do. Packets can take several different paths, because if you ever start drawing up a grid of where all the wires in the internet are, they go all over the place. And a lot of them go here, and come back over here. So you really have two different ways to maybe go to the same place and a lot of that. And that's what a router does. A router selects which path this packet takes this time to make a logical wire between the two computers. Key piece of information to know. A router only worries about where the packet goes next. If you hook computers together over a long distance, you will generally have several hops, they're called, which is a wire between two routers, and then that router will put it on another wire that goes the next hop. The router at the beginning has no idea what's going to happen after it puts it on the wire it's supposed to. That's the next router's problem. So in routing, the only thing it worries about is where its packet goes next. When you are faced with a problem, the internet is dead. It's broke. Remember, a bad route is a broken wire. Now, I'm trying to make these, at this introductory level, simple concepts with no technical nature associated with them, because these are the parts we forget when we start getting into details. That ultimately, it's simple. Routing creates virtual wires, so a bad route's a broken wire. So if you look like you got a broken wire, where might the problem be? It might be time to look at the routing, because you probably have a broken wire, because that's what it looks like. And odds are, it's exactly what it's going to turn out to be. Especially if you're just starting out, when you're building something, and you haven't put it together yet. And, like everything else, if your wires are broken, nothing will go down them. The next part of this is, we have the wires between routers. I'm going to draw a little diagram here. The last time I taught this class, I did a lot of these diagrams and published them in the book, and I noticed that people read along and nodded their heads and then didn't really understand what the diagram meant the next, about 15 minutes later. So one of the things we're going to do in this class is you're going to participate in the diagramming. Any of these diagrams you want to have, you have a pad and a pencil. Because I think if you draw them, you'll be a little more involved in them, and if you have a question while you're drawing it, you'll ask it. Instead of when you're staring at it and thinking you're not supposed to have any. That's the other thing. Anyone has any questions, especially when we get into the next segments where we start getting to details, I don't want to lose anybody if I can hold on to you. We'll spend a reasonable amount of time trying to get everybody brought along on all the details, because the point is you're here to learn and I'm here to teach, and I don't want either of us to fail. Remember, we started out where we had a computer here, and we had a computer here. And what was the whole point? To put a wire between them. Now this computer's probably on a LAN. Let's say it's three computers on an Ethernet. Then let's say this one's on a LAN. Now we have to put a wire somehow between these computers, and we'll just, for the sake of the fact that Anthony's managed to survive long enough to come back and I get to see him again since August from Venezuela, let's say this one's in this room. Thank you. You noticed this wasn't writing, huh? This one's in this room, and let's say this one's at Anthony's in Venezuela. I don't know if you've got three computers on a LAN. You probably got more than that. I only have three here on the table. But in any case, we're not really going to go string a wire from here to Venezuela. I'm not going to get a big roll of wire and hang it out the window and start going to Venezuela with a wire. It's not how it's going to happen. On the other hand, what we're going to probably do is we're probably going to hook a router to this LAN. And we're going to get some kind of a wire that goes to a router, maybe downtown Denver. And let's say that downtown Denver wire goes to Metropolitan Fiber Cable Company. They run fiber all over town, and they run it between towns in the United States. And let's say that, in fact, they have a wire that runs from here, or it's actually going to be a fiber optic, that runs from here to, oh, let's say, Fort Worth, Texas. Now, let's say in Fort Worth, Texas, they have a router, a little wire that runs to somebody else in Fort Worth, a totally different company, that happens to have, let's say, a wire that goes to Miami. And to keep this simple, I'll leave a few pieces out because this is enough to get the idea. And let's say that in Miami, they can go across town in Miami to yet another company that has a wire that runs to Venezuela, to Anthony City. And then let's say that Anthony has personally put in a wire from that company to his land in his city. This is very typical about how you get from one computer to another on the internet. Now, this is going to be a leased line that I bought. This is going to be the fiber optic link that Metropolitan Fiber owns. This is probably going to be a leased line downtown Denver that goes, say, from Metropolitan Fiber to IDG. I'm making these up. I don't know if these really would go where I wanted to go. And then this is probably going to be, oh, let's say, a T3 leased line that they bought that goes over to Miami. And then this is going to be a leased line that goes across town in Miami. And then this is going to be maybe a fiber optic line that goes to Venezuela. And then this is going to be a leased line that goes across town in Venezuela from their company to Anthony. This gets us to the mixed variations of wiring that will happen in this wire. What kind of technologies have we got in this link? We've got Ethernet on each end. We've got a leased line of one type here, a fiber optic connection of a different type here. We've got another little leased line here. We've got a T3 line here and a fiber, another little T1 or T3, some kind of leased link here and fiber optic link here and another leased line here. So all different kinds of wires, but the whole point of them is to get a wire from here to here. So that's the point about the wires between routers. Anytime you have a route between any two computers, you're going to have a router and a wire between two routers, and a wire to another router, and a wire to another router, a wire to another router, and that's how it works. Routing says that if I put a packet in here with the address of a computer in Venezuela, it knows it's supposed to put it on this wire. When it gets here, this router might be hooked to wires that go, that one goes to Fort Worth, this other one might go up, say, to Chicago for other connections and stuff like that. So this router has to know that a packet with that address is supposed to get put on this wire. This router is supposed to know that a packet with this address over here is supposed to get put on this wire. This router is supposed to know it gets put on this wire. Again, this router, when it puts it on this wire, has no idea what's going to happen after that. That's what I meant when I said routers only care about what happens next, the next place they're supposed to put it. So all of these routers have to get programmed with that address down here. What's an address down in Venezuela? You got an IP address down there?
You mean a number?
Yeah, a number. Just a number?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, I'll make one up. We'll say it's 204-98-37-6, and we'll say that's a number on Anthony's desk in his house down there in Venezuela because he's got himself this wire. See what kind of a gift you get for coming here? You get all this stuff that you're going to get to see when you go back home. You didn't even know you had it, probably. Anyway, this packet with this address, when it leaves here, this router knows to put it here. When this router sees a packet with that address, it knows to send it on this wire. This router, if any one of these routers doesn't know, let's say this router has a wire up here and it accidentally sends the packet that way, what happens? Broken wire. Packet won't get to Venezuela. Why? Because the routing is bad right here. And we're going to go into detail about what routing is and how it works, but first I want you to understand the big picture, the point of it all. Because this is what we're trying to do when we get down to the details. And this is where we break down when we fail to accomplish this whole thing. By the way, you hear about the internet backbone a lot. And it's like there's some big wire out there that the whole internet goes through. And that's the backbone. Everybody wants to know where it is. It's this. That's how the backbone really is. It's really just what we drew here. It's just one wire hooked to another wire hooked to another wire. There is no internet backbone as such, not one place that the internet, everything goes. This is what it is. Just do this a lot. I mean a lot, a lot. Long distance wires in this circuit can be either dial-up modems or leased lines. Let us say down here that in Venezuela, Anthony really doesn't have a lot of traffic on the internet, and he doesn't need to pay for a full leased line, or maybe he's somewhere where they won't put one in for him, or for whatever reason. So we hang a modem on here, on this router, and a modem on this router, and we just dial on a telephone between those two. Did that change anything? Changed nothing. When that connection is made, this packet can still be sent from here to here and from here to here, same as it always was. The only thing it changed is it's probably slower on a dial-up line. But as far as what you can do, absolutely nothing changed. A dial-up connection in the internet, key point to remember, a dial-up connection in the internet is nothing but a really slow on-demand leased line. They're not different. It's just a wire in the network. It's a wire you can plug in and unplug. When you dial it up, you plug it in. When you hang up, you unplug it. So if you call in on the internet with a slip or a PPP connection to a dial-up port on an internet service provider, you are as connected to the internet as any computer in it. When you get into leased lines, which we will do later in this class, you'll probably already aware leased lines come in several different technologies, and they provide vastly different cost-performance trade-offs. And most of the agony in leased line procurement is making your cost-performance decision, because what you want is all the performance with none of the cost. And that line's not out there. So you get to get more performance for more cost. Different kind of performance. I can have faster but kind of choppier for the same money as I can have a little slower but not choppy. And, oh man, which do I really want? I don't know. Man, this is agony. And that's where the agony of leased lines comes from, is in making that decision when you put one in. Leased line technologies come in two primary types. There's point-to-point circuits. These provide a fixed wire between two locations with predictable, non-varying characteristics. If you get a point-to-point wire, it has got a certain speed. You buy one of a certain speed. I buy a 256K wire, I buy a 1 megabit wire. Whatever it is, that means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every tick of the clock, that's the data rate it flows at. It operates as an absolutely dedicated wire. Now, it may be implemented in a lot of odd ways, but it operates exactly this way. The other kind are statistically multiplex circuits. These circuits connect each location to a nearby to you multiplexed packet switch network, and then form a logical circuit through that packet switch network, often called a cloud, between the two close endpoints, establishing for you a circuit with statistically average characteristics. That means it operates as it operates at any given instant in time, but if you average it over several days, if you kept feeding it data constantly over several days, on average it would go this fast. Frame relay is the most common example of that type of circuit. obviously, what's the point of this kind of circuit? It drops cost. What did you trade? You traded fixed, predictable wire for a statistically average wire. The point-to-point technologies you'll run into, DS0, 56K. We're going to go into detail on each of these when we get to the leased line part of this class, but in this introduction, I just want to lay out for you the areas we're going to cover and generally give you some big picture concepts of what they look like. DS1 or T1 are two names for the same thing because one name would give you a shot at not being confused. If there's two different terms and they actually mean exactly the same thing, it gives you a shot to be confused. But DS1 and T1 mean exactly the same thing. They're just synonyms. That is a 1.5544 megabit per second point-to-point wire. Internationally, it's E1, and it's 2 megabits. T1 technology, that speed, is United States and Canada, as far as I know, nowhere else. I think for the rest of the world, it's 2 megabits. And it's called an E1. Technology underlying those circuits is identical. They just pick two different sets of standards on how to put them together for the base speed. A fractional T1, which you hear about, doesn't mean you get 3 out of 4 wires. It means you get a full T1 circuit that you don't use all of. When we get into T1 technology discussion in our leased line section, you'll come to understand how that's done and how it works. But the bottom line is the hardware involved, everything about it's identical for a fractional as a full. They just turn off parts of it so you can't use it electrically. The advantage of this is that if you get a fractional T1 and you later want to upgrade it to more speed, all you have to do is arrange with the person who has the CSU-DSU on the other end to change the switches. The wire's the same, the hardware's the same. Yeah?
Does that mean that if you have control over CSU-DSU at both points, you can modify that whenever you choose?
Absolutely. And that's why the wire in a fractional T1 doesn't cost any less than for a full T1, because you didn't buy anything different for the wire. Fractional T1 charges, if you look at it, normally come into play when you're connecting to a vendor for a high-speed link to the internet. And those charges come in two parts. There's what's often called the local loop, which means I'm buying the real wire between us. And then there's what's called the port charge. But what does the port charge mean? Well, port charge means I've brought the internet into my building, and I've got a router, and I've got a port on it that I'll plug you into if you pay me. How much do you pay me? Well, the faster you want to go, the more I'm going to charge you because you're sucking out the bandwidth I brought in, and eventually I'm going to have to get more in if I try to sell it to a lot of people. And it's going to cost me to bring it in. I'm going to mark it up, divide it out, and sell some of it to you. And the more of it you want, the more I'm going to charge you for. You're not buying anything physical at that point. You're buying my willingness to plug your wire into the port on my router. And it's a negotiated charge. It says, for $1,500, I'll let you have a T1 speed. But I'll tell you what, if you only want 256K, I'll charge you $500. And so I'll set my switches down so you've got 256K. You set them the same. And now I'll let you plug in for $500 a month.
So it doesn't involve the local phone company?
Doesn't involve the phone company at all. And that's a key part of fractional T1. And we'll get into real solid detail on that in the leased line section of the class, but it's important to understand that. These are the kinds of things and the kind of mysteries this class is intended to clear up for you, along with showing you how to use the technology when you go to use it to understand the mystery parts that are kind of invisible behind the curtain that you don't really... You may get to pay for, but you rarely get to see. Statistically multiplexed lines. Frame relay is the most common type. They lower cost by removing performance predictability. Performance is now guaranteed on average and minimum values, not an absolute, unvarying number like a true point-to-point line. And they share telco resources among several circuits, of which yours is one, and that's why they're cheaper. Telco can build a set of wires and sell you parts of them in a statistically multiplexed way. However, remember how I said they're hooked up. If you buy a frame relay line between two points like this, apparently I'm drying these things up faster than you can bring me new ones, huh? Anyway, if we blow that picture up, and let us say that was a frame relay line. What we have here is our router. And we're going to buy a point-to-point leased line of some kind from us to a very close-by building, like the latest nearest telephone company central office, maybe a mile away or something. And over here, same thing's going to happen. So we're going to have those two pieces, and then this is going to go into and out of the frame relay cloud, which is shared wires throughout the whole telephone company system, where multiple people might be on the same wire. Therefore, if you're at your building looking at this, and we'll get into this in a lot more detail when we do the frame relay class specifically, or the leased line part of class specifically, the wire that comes into your building is always still going to be a point-to-point, fixed, predictable wire from you to here. That's not very much of what you're thinking of as your whole wire. But it means something very explicit. It means you're still going to have a DS0 or a DS1 circuit to hook it in. So you don't have different equipment on your line for a frame relay line from a regular one. The only thing that's different is the protocol it runs on it, not the hardware.
Well,
yeah.
Is that the same? Is frame relay the same as X.25?
No. It's similar in nature. They're both packet switched networks.
Both multiplex
packet switched networks. Any statistically multiplex line is going to have some sort of packet switched network in this cloud between these two clo points. And the cost saving is you bought two short point-to-point wires, and the bulk of the length of the wire you bought was done in a statistically multiplex packet switching proprietary network of some sort. Be it frame relay, SMDS, X25, there's a million kinds.
Yeah. One thing you might want to be aware of, I've run across a bit of an off the ISP.
Yes, you can do that, but that's another story, and we'll get into that in the leased line class.
Still one other question?
The key point here I want is not for that level of detail to obscure the big understanding of the big picture. Because the thing is, details are easy to get. Knowing what they mean is hard. Knowing where they go is what's hard. And what I'm trying to do in this segment of the class is establish that framework where all these pieces go. Yes?
When you said it,
absolutely. And in fact, I even mean more than that. The same port, the same synchronous ports, the same everything. Literally, there is no hardware that's different. There is only software that's different. That software may be embedded in what you think of as a piece of hardware known as a router, which means that if you're going to hook to a frame relay or an SMDS cloud, you have to have a router that knows that kind of protocol and has that software in it. Some do, some don't. But it's only the software that's different. At this level, that's the point that I'm really trying to make. Because there's a lot of confusion about, well, if I get a frame relay line, or do I need a different CSU? If I get this, do I need a different this? And that's really what I'm trying to help you get the picture of how to see where those pieces go together at this level. Domain name system. Remember, we're still going over the four pieces here of the introduction of what you need to know about the internet. And what I'm trying to tell you at this level is what you need to know, and in general terms, what they are and how they affect your life. The domain name system humanizes TCP/IP technology by giving names to IP addresses. ESOF.com means a computer. You telnet to ESOF.com. You FTP it. You World Wide Web to it. You're hooking to a computer. There's a specific computer in this building with that name, and only one. All the other ones have a different name. www.esof.com. lab.esof.com. The thing is, those names don't mean a thing to the internet. They literally mean nothing. The way that I typically try to explain this is to use something that everybody's familiar with. That's making a telephone call. If I told you to call the Aurora National Bank, and you ran out of the room to say, sure, I'll do that, and then realized you didn't know its phone number, you really don't have to find, the way you find it out is you go get a phone book. You look up the name in the phone book, and what does it tell you? It tells you the phone number. That's what DNS does. You look up ESOP.com in the domain name system big phone book in the sky, and it tells you 199.45.137.2. And that's what the computer dials to make the connection. The process is identical to what human beings do with a phone book, including what you would do, because it's an electronic phone book, if you didn't have a phone book. If you didn't have a phone book, you do have one piece of trained cultural information that's been drilled into you all your life. That's the number of directory assistants. You just know that. The DNS has a similar construct. That's the telephone numbers of the root servers. The domain name server just has to know that. If it knows that, however, it can get everything else. Because what you would do is pick up the phone, call directory assistance, let's say for what city, and say, I'm guessing Aurora, it says Aurora National Bank is what I'm calling for. I'd like the number of the Aurora National Bank. Okay. The number is 699-2837 or whatever it is. Say thank you, and you hang it up. I mean, if you've got a good memory, you remember it. If you're like me, you quick try to write it down. You hang up the phone, then you pick it up, and you make the phone call you intended to make to the Aurora National Bank. That is exactly how DNS works. 100% exactly the same way. DNS resolvers and servers just know the numbers of the root servers. When you ask them ESOP.com, they call the root server. And the root server says, in a little more complicated way than this, which we'll get into in detail when we go through it, says here's the phone number, in this case the IP address, of the machine that's an IP or something.